All right, let's go to James 4. James 4. It took me a minute to remember where we were. It feels like it's been a while since we've been in this study. A couple weeks now. It was about 3 weeks ago. We were looking at the middle part of this chapter. And the conversation is really centered around what concept? What major idea jumps out to you? Really, this goes back even earlier in the writing, but it's been a constant, especially in chapter 4, is the idea that those who are wealthy can get themselves into a snare, into a trap. And as we ended class a couple weeks ago, one thing we all need to know, when he's talking about rich, he's talking about us. We have been blessed so immensely. You may not consider yourself rich, but I bet if you compare yourself to the rest of the world, to the rest of time, you and I have been blessed immensely. There will always be richer people, but we have been blessed so immensely. And so as we read these things and we think about what's going on here, we need to see ourselves in how this would apply to us. And so he said in verse 9, I'm going to state this one, then we'll go to verse 13. But he says, "Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your gloom and your joy to gloom." That's it's kind of a depressing verse, isn't it? What's his point? Be careful of pride and arrogance and comfort. We can become very comfortable. And it's taking joy in all the things you've accumulated in your life. You ought to consider that these things are fleeting. They can disappear quickly. And when we put our trust in ourselves or in things, we are headed toward destruction, right? That's not stable ground. So, with that thought, that kind of backdrop in mind, let's go to verse 13. Let's read a little bit here. So this is James 4:13. He says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin." All right, so let's talk about this for a couple of minutes. So he grabs our attention and he says, "Come now," right? Pay attention, listen up, hear what I'm saying to you. And so then he goes on into this discussion about those who make plans to do what? To prosper, right? They're making all these big plans. Now, it would be very easy for us to get over in this idea that he's condemning any kind of planning financially or any other such planning. That's not what he's condemning. So what is the condemnation here about, or the warning that's given to us? Okay, it's a little bit of an element of it. Okay, he calls that arrogance, right? He says all such boasting is arrogance. Why is it arrogant, though?
They're putting their riches in the future that may not even happen.
Okay.
You think you can do it yourself?
What have they left out in all of this planning? They left God out of all of it. It's really me, me, me. It's about look at what I'm going to do. I'm going to go here and I'm going to make this big profit. I'm going to go here and be successful. I'm going to be good. They're making all of these plans absent of God. What does Paul say to Timothy about the desire to be rich? What does he say? For the, y'all can quote this. For the what? For the love of money is what? All kinds of evil. Not all evil, but all kinds of evil. There are other evils, right? There's other things we lust for. But Paul is trying to get Timothy to understand what? About money. What is he trying? Is he saying wealthy people are evil? No, what is he saying? When my desire becomes to be rich,
I'm self-sufficient.
What?
I can do whatever I want to do because I have ample money.
And that's part of it, right? We lose trust of God. But it also opens us up to getting rich in all kinds of ways. Does every way somebody becomes rich a wholesome way? Do people ever cheat people? Now later, as we continue reading this, you get into chapter 5, he's going to get into what's going on with these rich people and how they're getting rich. They're cheating people. And so when we talk about this idea of making profit, when that becomes the goal of my life, then I'm misaligned. If my goal in life is to be rich, I think you're striving after the wrong thing. God will bless us. And God in no way condemns hard work. Right? He doesn't condemn us getting a raise at work or moving up in a company. That's not what he's condemning. But when that becomes my drive in life, when that's how I'm trying to receive fulfillment in life, that's going to lead me astray. And he says it's arrogant. He compares our life to what? To a mist, or some translations a vapor. But it's the idea of water, you know, as it heats up and it forms condensation. It comes off into the air, and what happens to it? It quickly dissipates. What's his point? It didn't last long. Your life is short. And our decisions matter. Every decision we make, every moment is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to do something good or something evil. And so when we have such short lives and we look back at our legacy, what will our choices say about what drove us? What drives us? Is it God or is it self-fulfillment? He said that we need to understand we don't have that long. Jesus said that we should, and he was telling the disciples, we need to work while it is day because the night quickly comes when no man can work. Again, Jesus' point is what? We only have now. And this is it. And so what we produce in our life now is important. And so we can't put off for tomorrow what needs to be done today. And so he changes the dynamic in verse 15, he says, instead, you ought to say, this is how your mindset should be. If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. What's the difference in that statement and the one in verse 13. What's the change?
It takes into account what God wants.
Okay. Mitch.
Huh?
God is first. He's not completely left off, but he's the first thing we think about.
It's also not focused on the next step at all. It's like, okay, if it happens, it happens. Not, okay, here's a goal that I'm reaching that I need to reach. It's like, okay, there is something that's going to happen, but it's God's plan.
And does it disallow future planning? It doesn't disallow it. So then how does it change it? It doesn't make the plan everything. The plan for me to prosper is not my entire goal. It isn't my goal. My goal is to do what the Lord wills. If the Lord wills, this is what we're going to do. So it's a mindset change where God comes first and throughout what I'm doing. And so, yeah, you're going to make plans. Young couple find out they're pregnant. They're going to start making a lot of plans, aren't they? They're going to plan a room. They're going to, they're going to plan how to care and all of these things that are going to come along. That's needed, right? Those plans ever get messed up? Sure they do. You're going to sit down and you're going to make plans in your career. Maybe they work out. Maybe something else works out. But God needs to be at the front. He says, when we leave God out, we become arrogant. And that kind of boasting is evil. Now, 17 gets lifted out of context a lot. And we need to keep it in its context. So that's the discussion when he brings up the next verse. So he says, whoever knows to do the right thing. What is that right thing? What's the right thing he's saying? Include God in your plans. What? Proper relationship with money. And include God in your plans. Those two things are important. Keep money in its proper place. You may be rich today. That don't mean you're going to be rich tomorrow. And that shouldn't bother us a lot. We need to be able to deal with that as Christians. Those things are fleeting. And so he says, knows to do the right thing and fails to do it for him is what?
Sin.
He's not trying to say that we get to set up our own system of sin. Who gets to set up what sin is? God does. We're not the judge. He just said that earlier, right? Becoming judges of the law. That's what we talked about last time. We don't get to set up our own framework of sin. That's what got the Pharisees into trouble, wasn't it? They set up their own heads around the law, and God and Jesus condemned them for that. We don't get to make a personal set of morality. That's not our right. Our morality has to be based on what? On God, on the Word of God. So I've heard that misused a lot. That's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about you feel bad about something, therefore it's sin. No, sin is sin. 1 John tells us what sin is. What is sin? Lawlessness. It's violation of the law. What he's talking about here in this context is when we know not to boast arrogantly about our plans, our wealth. When we get prideful about what we have, we've done something sinful. He says that kind of boasting is evil. And so we need to have a proper relationship with money. And we must keep God in all of our plans.
Man's life consists not in the abundance of the things he possesses.
Yeah. Yes. What does Matthew chapter 5 say? I was listening to somebody talk about James. I thought this is kind of interesting. About how James you can parallel a lot of what James says to the Sermon on the Mount. That's an interesting study. I didn't do that in this, but go back and do that and compare James to Matthew 5, 6, and 7. There's a lot of parallels throughout. But here's another one. Matthew chapter 6 tells us, again, Jesus talking about our relationship with money. What does he say about storing up treasure? Do not store up treasure on earth where moth and rust eat and destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But do what? But lay your treasures up in heaven where those things cannot be corrupted, where they cannot be stolen. And so we need to be careful about those things. He goes on in that same context. You may remember this. He says, for where your heart is, for where your treasure is, there your heart, your desire will be also. So again, it's the question of both Jesus and James is, what drives you? What is your driver in life? So we need to think about it. Yes, do you have a question, Brianna?
So I was always confused reading that passage. I was like, why would Jesus tell us to put our treasures up in heaven? Because I was like, why would he tell us to put we won't be able to bring that with us when and all of that. So now you're telling me that it's not like treasures like physically, but like our desires is what you're saying.
Yes, yeah, so ultimately, what is treasure? I'll go back to this question. Why is gold valuable? Why is gold valuable? Huh? Because we say it is. It's just a yellow metal. But we can buy stuff because we give it a value. On its own, is it really any better than other types of metal? Is it? It's a superconductor. So if you're an electrician or you're an electrical engineer, yeah, sure, gold is kind of neat. But it really only has value because we desire it. Diamonds. Why are they valuable? Because we desire them. It's take another, for instance. The crazy thing was, I'm going to forget what they're called, but McDonald's had this little, you remember when Happy Meals used to have the little toy gifts? What was a Beanie Baby craze? Does anybody remember the Beanie Baby craze? And if you don't, you're probably, it says I'm way older than you. But I remember that. And people would collect these. They would spend tons of money buying Happy Meals to collect them because, and I remember one really sad story. This guy had collected all these Beanie Babies because that was his retirement. He made an investment in that. What's the problem with it? People are fickle. And what people were interested in, they're not interested anymore. Go try to sell a Beanie Baby today. You can't. Nobody wants that. Yeah, your buyer pool has gone very strong. My point here is, it's only valuable because we say it is, because people have a desire for it. That's the market. That's capitalism, right? Treasure is just whatever you desire it to be. What one man's treasure is, another cares nothing about. I'll give you one more example. We'll move on. Used to be in your wallet. No, I don't know if any men do this anymore, but they would have pictures inside the wallet. Who are those pictures of? It's usually grandchildren, right? A granddad would love to take out that wallet and show you those precious pictures. Now they do it on their phone. Somebody was doing that the other day with me, and you're showing me their grandchildren and how excited they were. That means a lot for that grandparent. But Joe down the street, does he care about those pictures? Now you do, and I don't want to bust your bubble. Your grandchildren are awesome. I know they are. It's just they don't know your grandchildren like you do. They have their own grandchildren they're caring about. But they're valuable Because they're valuable to you. What do we value? What do we put a value on? Is God part of that? Is He the whole of that? He ought to be what we value, what we strive for. Not these things which are fleeting. Again, your life is as a vapor. That includes all the aspects of your life. Your house that you live in now, you may love your house. It feels very comfortable, doesn't it? I feel very blessed to live where we live. But you know, somebody else is going to live in our house one day. Somebody's going to walk our halls. They're going to fill our closets with their clothes. They're going to have their stuff. They may even arrange it differently. They're going to paint our walls. Probably some color I don't like. But it won't be mine. Because these things we cannot hold on to. Again, Matthew, Jesus says, store up in heaven your treasures. Make those things your desires. All right. Any other questions about that? All right, so let's go to chapter 5 as we quickly moving through James. James 5 and verse 1. He says, now remember what we're talking about. He's in the same context. I know there's a chapter break, but there's not a break in thought. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. Matthew, remember the Sermon on the Mount? You have laid up treasure in the last days. So, again, we're in that same thing. And you may recall how verse 1 of James 5:1 is very similar to what? Well, go up one chapter to chapter 4. If I can find the verse I'm looking for. Oh. That was verse 7. Am I wrong? He said a very similar thing, and I can't find it now for some reason. Oh, verse 9. It's 9, not 7. Remind my brain that. But notice verse 9 again, the verse we started with, be wretched and mourn and weep. He almost bookends it here, doesn't he? He says in 5:1, weep, howl, right? Those same kind of ideas. What are those kind of cries? What does that evoke in your mind or your imagination when you hear weep and howl?
Anguish.
Anguish. I have a very vivid picture. I will forever have this. It's personal to me, I know. I'm going to share a personal story. You probably have similar ones. But when I think of weep and howl, I think of my grandmother. My grandfather had passed away, and I was about 8 years old. And I remember her physical condition and how she just wept boisterously at the visitation. And she just cried and was inconsolable, right? And that's the image I have in my mind when I think about weeping and howling. That kind of picture, this very sad brokenness. He says, those who are rich. So who is he talking about? I think this is very important. When he says, you rich, who is the you? Is it just any wealthy person?
No, but anyone who's taking pride in their wealth.
Okay, taking pride in their wealth. I'm going to add to that. Nobody afraid to talk. I think you're barking up the right tree there, right? That's the idea there. It's those who he's been talking about throughout all of this, those who put their desire in their things, who have put all of their treasure in what they have here and now. Their value to life is what they possess. It's what they can gain. What's that?
Their wealth is their God.
Their wealth is their God. They've made it their idol where they worship the things they possess. Can we do that? Can we be in danger of idolatry? I was I'm watching this show. And I really enjoy it. They're talking about the Exodus, Moses leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, and now they're in the midst of building the tabernacle. But right before all that, you'll remember what event happened when Moses went up on the mountain to receive the commandments. Yeah, they want to worship Baal. Have you ever wondered why they worship a cow? You remember the words, I love Aaron's words. Do you remember it? He said, we threw the gold in there and out came this cow. He just threw it in there and out came the cow. Right? But why a cow? Why that particular God?
That's how they measured their wealth.
They measured their wealth? But more practically, it's an Egyptian God. Where had they just come from and spent 400 years? Think about that for a minute. 400 years. One of the funny lines on the show, and I love this, is there's this guy that's in amongst the group who's an Egyptian who got kind of trapped with the Jewish people as they left. He was an Egyptian soldier, and his name's Jesse, and like he's just kind of huddling out and trying to hang out with them because he has nobody around him. And they're like, and one character says, "Man, doesn't he kind of seem Egyptian to you?" And the other lady, who is Zipporah, which is Moses' wife, she said, "I thought all y'all were Egyptians." They've been Egypt for 400 years, right? And that's 20 generations. You think about that. 20 generations of Jews have grown up in Egypt. Now, here's the point. When you're around a group for that long, what's going to happen over time? You're going to assimilate. It's very hard to not assimilate. What's that?
Hathor.
Yeah. Yeah, and so they make this God and they do it to something they relate it to. And so they're still dealing with that as now they've come out. I had a point I was going with that. Go ahead.
They're in the middle of the desert. They don't get the gold themselves. They stole it from Egypt. So they're taking the Egyptian gold, Egyptian
Yeah, they were actually given it. They didn't even steal it. God impaled, or not impaled. What?
He told them to plunder Egypt by asking them for it.
And the Egyptians just brought it to them, right? And they end up making this. You ever give an example and then lose your point? I kind of went too far with that example. But they've gotten misaligned. They put their trust in something that wasn't God. And when God knows what's going on, he becomes very angry. I mean, how short is their attention span that so quickly they have turned away? And at the forefront of that is Aaron, who has already been a spokesman for God. And yet he's the one leading this parade into idolatry. And so he says, "You rich, you should weep and howl." Why? Because if they stay in the state of being in love with their wealth, their end is going to be one of disaster when they get to Judgment Day. We'll keep on in this text. I'm out of time. But continue, read chapter 5, if you will, before next week, and we'll look at some other aspects of this chapter. Again, thank you all so much for being here and spending this time.